Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Deck your home with Blinds.com. DIY or let us install. Free design consultation. Plus free samples and free shipping.
Ho, ho, ho! Blinds.com invented a better way to buy custom high-quality window treatments with no showroom mock-ups or waiting around for quotes from pushy salespeople, saving you time and money for the holidays with upfront pricing right on our website.
Go right now to Blinds.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Satisfaction guaranteed.
Deck your home this holiday season with Blinds.com. Save up to 40% on select styles, plus a free professional measure. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
The North Texas stories you need to know. This is the All Local from News Radio 1080 KRLD.
He's been with the Fort Worth PD for more than a quarter of a century, and now the chief is calling it a career.
Chief Neil Noakes plans to retire in May of next year, exactly 25 years after he started his career with the Fort Worth Police. Along the way, he served in multiple ranks across the department in areas like patrol, DWI, motors, and internal affairs. Since 2021, he's been the police chief. Noakes says it's been an honor of a lifetime.
It was always Fort Worth or nowhere. Completely humbled, completely honored. It has been the highlight of my professional life.
And as to why he's calling it quits now?
I recently became a grandfather. I've got one more on the way. And my fear is trying to be the best chief I can be and the best husband, father, and grandfather, something will suffer. What I don't want is years from now to look back and realize how much of my family's life I missed.
With this retirement, Dallas and Fort Worth will be looking for new chiefs to lead their departments. From the 24-hour news center, Austin York, News Radio 1080, KRLD.
Terrell is mourning the loss of a police officer killed in the line of duty overnight. KRLD's Alan Skaya is at Terrell Police Headquarters, where people are paying their respects to the young father who lost his life just after making a traffic stop.
Terrell police are inviting people to leave cards or flowers for Officer Jacob Cantinoza's family. They've parked his squad car in front of police headquarters. One guy who stopped by says he hopes he can send a message to other officers still responding to calls.
We never take y'all for granted. I'd come to the rescue in a heartbeat if I had to. Anyway, sad day.
Cantinoza made a traffic stop near Highway 34 and I-20 Sunday night. Police say Darian Johnson shot Cantinoza. A couple people called 911 and a passerby even used his radio to contact dispatch. Cantinoza had given dispatch the license plate, so Terrell Police and DPS chased the car 30 miles to Canton. They arrested Johnson there for capital murder of a peace officer. In Terrell, Alan Skaya, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Final report over the wings over Dallas Air Show a couple of years ago. It puts the blame on the organizers and the man in charge of the air traffic.
The disaster unfolded in less than 4 seconds when a vintage P-63 plane banked right into the back half of a B-17 bomber. Both planes went down, killing six in front of hundreds.
Oh, my God.
Did he hit the plane? That other plane hit him?
Yes.
The person controlling the show is getting much of the blame.
Fighters, left turn. Knock it off. Roll the truck. Let's go.
You're relying on a person on the ground who's standing on a staircase or something, calling out over the radio. And, you know, by the time the delay that occurs and the speed that these planes are moving, it was a recipe for disaster.
Attorney Kent Krause represents some of the victims. The NTSB says there was a lack of planning and a lack of coordination in the air. From the 24-hour news center, LP Phillips News, Radio 1080 KRLD.
It's now 4:06. Now, without comment, the U.S. Supreme Court today rejected a death penalty appeal by a Tarrant County man. Drug cartel member Hector Acosta was convicted of capital murder for the deaths of a man and a woman from Arlington. At the same time of the conviction, prosecutor Kevin Russo said police were also able to tie a third murder to Acosta.
The third murder occurred in the Wedgewood neighborhood in Fort Worth, and it happened in July. It preceded the double homicide that he's been convicted of.
Now, two of the victims were dismembered. The case now goes back to Tarrant County, where a judge will set an execution date.
Baseball's winter meetings begin today in Dallas, and there's going to be a lot to talk about. Starting with the gargantuan contract that the New York Mets have thrown at Juan Soto. 15 years, $765 million in all.
You think the other owners are upset with the Mets saying, hey, we got to beat this now when we want to sign a guy?
This is actually, in terms of the total amount, it's actually bigger than Shohei Ohtani's deal, although that was only a 10-year contract. But either way, it's an astonishing amount of money. So you're going to bring in Rangers beat writer Evan Grant with the Dallas Morning News. He's going to be covering the meetings this week.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing excellent. Okay. Is anyone worth this kind of money?
Hey, listen, I think my approach on this is, you know, billionaires have a lot of money, as we're finding out. And if willing to pay it,
yeah,
somebody's worth it. You know, Juan Soto was, I think, when this whole market began, people thought Juan Soto is going to be above $500 million. Well, it very quickly got to above $600 million. And over the start of the weekend, it looked like, yes, he was going to approach the $700 million figure. And I always thought that his agent, Scott Boras, certainly wanted to walk away with a record deal in terms of total dollars. And so am I surprised by $765 million? Look, it's an astonishing figure, but nothing in this industry surprises me anymore. These are owners who have ridiculous amounts of money and who want to win, and it's not a traditional business model. And for Steve Cohen and the Mets to take Juan Soto away from the Yankees, it's a coup.
Yeah, talk about these long-term deals. I remember Mike Trout got one, I think 13 years. Shohei, you mentioned a decade. Is that what we're going to see trending, these decades-long contracts now going forward?
Well, you know, Corey Seager got a 10-year deal when he signed with the Rangers. And there's always going to be that tier of guys who get the free agency early or whose teams actually want to buy them out of free agency where it makes a little bit of sense. But we're talking about Juan Soto with a 15-year deal who would be 41 at the age of his contract. And to your example, Mike Trout, we're seeing a guy now in his mid-30s who experiences what so many mid-30s everyday baseball players do, right, kind of the breaking down of their bodies. And you're paying on the back end for what you hope is performance on the front end, and that's the only way to sum it up. I don't think that the Mets have any expectation that at 41 years old
he's going all the way.
Now, so I you mentioned the Rangers, and I'm glad you did. They are kind of hamstrung when it comes to free agents. They are still the only team in baseball without a local TV deal. What is the status of
that? Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That.
Well, I think the Rangers are optimistic about their TV deal, and I think that while they are the only one that doesn't have certainty over their rights yet for 2025, I think they're fairly far down the road in creating their own RSN, and I think that will be more lucrative for them than what most of the other teams that had expiring deals ended up doing. Most of those teams either ended up having Major League Baseball produce their games, which kind of takes a significant amount of their ability to generate revenue out of their hands, or they went back to Diamond Sports Group, which is now going to brand, instead of under Bally's, under FanDuel Sports, for, I believe, discounted values over what their previous rights had been. So the Rangers are striking out on their own. They feel like this is the fourth, this is the fourth biggest market in the country. You look at the teams in bigger markets, the Yankees and Mets have their own networks. The Cubs have their own networks. The Rangers feel they are capable of doing the same and bringing in similar amounts of money. It just is on the timing. I think, you know, from a baseball operations perspective, you'd like to have a little bit more certainty. If you need to go out and spend a few extra dollars, we're talking about a few million extra dollars. If you need to go out and spend that, do you have that from ownership, or is ownership waiting to see exactly what the final dollar figure is going to be on a TV deal before being able to give you some more flexibility?
And real quick, before we let you go, I got to talk about this golden at bat rule. To me, this is ridiculous. Tell us what it is, and does this have any chance of actually being implemented?
I think this was all a trial balloon by Rob Manfred, and the idea is something that sounds like it would be a great idea for an all-star game. It is, the idea would be that a team could, one time during the game, choose any batter they want to have. This is a basic formulary of the rule. There are all kinds of variables that could spin out of it, but the idea would be one time in the game, a team could choose whoever they wanted to hit to hit. So if you came up in a game deciding moment in the eighth inning, and you were the Dodgers and you had two men on base, regardless of the situation, you could bring Shohei Ohtani to the plate. I think it smacks of gimmickry. I think most of the rules that Major League Baseball has instituted in the last few years, you could say there are real practical applications. A lot of people don't like the extra innings rule, but I do think it gives people a little bit more certainty on pitcher usage, and it eliminates some potential for injury. Same thing with the DH. It creates an equal playing field. But this just smacks of gimmickry, and I don't think that when it's all said and done, we're going to see baseball go down that road. I certainly hope it doesn't.
Evan, thanks so much. It's a great insight, as always. We appreciate the time. Rangers beat writer Evan Grant for the Dallas Morning News with us here on KRLD. How about those SMU Mustangs?
Yeah, how about them?
They lose a heartbreaker on Saturday, but picked up a win yesterday.
I was like the coach, man. I was nervous watching that selection show. I didn't think they were going to make it, to be honest with you.
I thought Alabama was going to get in, and it turned out to be just the other way around.
Crimson Tide was cooled.
SMU loses to Clemson 34. That's a killer of a game on Saturday night. But they squeak into the playoffs anyway at the expense of the Crimson Tide. So it's SMU, Penn State. The winner gets Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. And, yeah, those howls of indignation coming from Alabama. Former coach Nick Saban, he says this could change things up going forward.
I think one of the things that I've mentioned, you know, throughout this football season is if we don't take strength of schedule into consideration, is there any benefit to scheduling really good teams in the future? Like, you know, here at Alabama, we're supposed to play Notre Dame, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Florida State in the future outside the league. Well, those are great games for fans to see, and that's what I think we should be doing, you know, in college football, is creating more good inventory for great games that people are interested in. But do you enhance people wanting to do that, where what's the athletic director going to do? He may go cancel all those games now, knowing that the SEC is tough enough. But at the same time, I do think the best teams are in the playoff, which I think is most important. And no coach should have any complaint about what his circumstance is relative to getting in the playoffs or out of the playoffs, because they all controlled their own destiny and they all had opportunities and they had some flaws and bad losses that contributed to their circumstance. So this could be a learning lesson for each and every team and every individual on those teams.
So non-conference games this year, Alabama had Wisconsin, Western Kentucky, and Mercer.
All right, yeah, that's real tough.
Where is Mercer? SMU, meanwhile, had Nevada, BYU, and TCU. So conference games, obviously a little bit tougher for Alabama, but I had a couple of non-conference cupcakes in there. In the end, though, that loss to Oklahoma.
Oklahoma and Vandy.
And Vandy. That killed him. Carter Freeman, 105.3, the fan. He has come downstairs to the dungeon. He's joined us on the fifth floor to break it down a little bit.
And thank you guys for having me on.
Perfect.
So, Alabama fans, do they have a legitimate complaint here about getting left out?
I don't think so. The complaints about the schedule, I think, were silly because, as y'all just mentioned, all they did was lose in conference. And SMU's two losses were by 3 points to teams that are ranked in the top 25. And when they were winning games, they were blowing teams out. Even in some of Alabama's, you know, wins, they didn't look that great. So the entire season, I was all in on the Mustangs to make the CFP over Bama. And Bama got the benefit of the doubt, right? You know, they play in a tougher conference, and they lost three games. If SMU had lost three games, there'd be conversation, right? So it was a tough thing at the end for the committee. But I think, especially that loss to Oklahoma when they were 17-point favorites and they lose by 21, that should have been the nail in the coffin then. And that's what it ended up being.
I mean, if SMU doesn't make it here, they're effectively being punished for making it to their conference championship.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's something that has been a big talking point in the college football world is what do we need to do with conference championship weekend, because you don't want to punish a team for making it, having a really good regular season, but then losing at the very end. That just doesn't seem fair. And in my mind, thankfully, they didn't set a precedent of leaving SMU out after they lost that game.
Oh, you heard Nick Saban. He said at the end of the day that the best 12 teams made it. Do you think that's the case here?
I do. You can argue that Alabama would be favored by maybe double digits over SMU on a neutral field, but I argue that Alabama lost three games, and talent isn't everything. I've always been in the camp of the results on the field matter, and I think at the end of the day, a three-loss team should not be in the playoff. And it used to be a two-loss team shouldn't be in the playoff when it was only four teams, right? Now it's three losses, and especially when you lose games like Alabama or Ole Miss did to Kentucky, that should kind of get you out of there. So I think the teams that win and won big, the best teams, they did end up making the field.
Texas dropped three slots, number five. That means they don't get the bye on that first weekend. They get Clemson. Yeah, they get Clemson, the team to beat SMU. And SMU's got to go to Penn State. What are the chances of the two teams in those two games?
Well, Penn State lost the Big Ten title game to Oregon, but they did show me a lot more than I thought they would. They scored a lot against Oregon, which I wasn't expecting. So on one hand, I'm like, okay, maybe Penn State can do a little more in the playoff than I thought. Then I remember their head coach is James Franklin. And when James Franklin plays good teams, which in my mind, SMU is a good team, things don't go well for Penn State, even at home. And I love Rhett Lashley. I love the Mustangs offense. Kevin Jennings has just grown so much over the year at quarterback for SMU that I really, really think SMU has a great shot to go to Happy Valley and knock them off. And then on the other side, Texas should beat Clemson by three scores. Clemson is the worst team in the playoff. The only reason they're in is, and I was just saying, three-loss teams shouldn't be in the playoff. Well, they got in because they won their conference, so they're a little exempt there. But they're the worst team in the playoff. Texas should roll them. But that'll be an interesting revenge game for Cade Klubnik, who's a Austin Westlake product at quarterback for Clemson. So he'll be going back home to play a team that you probably wanted to play for growing up.
And the winner of that game then gets Arizona State.
Arizona State,
yes,
baby.
Question in the Peach Bowl. Yes.
Arizona State?
Yeah. So I was at the Big 12 title game this weekend
and watched
Cam Scataboo just run all over Iowa State. The dude is untackleable. And I was just on the fan an hour ago saying, I don't care where it is, I don't care who it is, how good your run defense is. And Texas, if they're to win over Clemson and play Arizona State, Texas has a great run defense. Cam Scataboo is still going to run all over you.
Yeah.
My guy had 200 plus scrimmage yards, 170 rushing yards. He was breaking tackles left and right. He's going to be a problem for whoever they face in the Peach Bowl.
All right. So what you got? SMU and Texas. Who has the best chance? Texas, they've got a legitimate chance to win this whole thing.
They do, and they've looked like an excellent team all season, and you can poo-poo on their schedule and who they played, but they took care of business against teams they should beat. And they lost by 15 to Georgia the first time in Austin, didn't look ready. This recent SEC championship game, they looked a lot more prepared. The only question is Quinn Ewers, between the 20s, he was excellent at quarterback. When it got into the red zone, they had big, big problems. Kicked a lot more field goals than they scored touchdowns, and that ended up costing them the SEC championship in the end. So they absolutely have the talent to win the whole thing this year. And they get the favorable side of the bracket as well, potentially, you know, playing a three-loss team in Clemson and then Arizona State potentially if they're to keep winning. But they need to have the consistent good quarterback play out of Ewers.
And as we said earlier, if you're hoping for a Texas-SMU matchup in this,
you got to go to the final.
National championship game. An old Southwest Classic battle in Georgia. That'd be awesome.
I'm pulling for it. They're on different sides of the bracket. That's why. Carter, thanks so much. It's very enlightening. Go Ponies. Go Horns.
The All Local is updated three times a day. For the latest news, weather, and traffic, listen to News Radio 1080 KRLD. Visit KRLD.com, download the Odyssey app, or ask your smart speaker to play News Radio 1080 KRLD.